The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. This week, Ursine enthusiasts Two Bears tell us about their party hit of the summer and taking the drastic step of recording their singing. We hear new tracks from Warpaint, Jeffrey Lewis and Moonface, plus there's your comments from the blog too. It's all coming up in this week's Music Weekly. Hello and welcome to the programme. I hope your week has been wonderful. In the studio this week with me are guardian.co.uk/musics Tim Jones. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Alexis.
And the Guardian Guide's Rebecca Nicholson. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi.
How are we all doing? Are we good? Are we raring to go?
I'm great. I've just had some for breakfast.
Leave that in.
Like you told me to say, is that right? Have I done that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. Well, later in the programme, we'll be hearing from the guys behind Two Bears. But let's start with the tunes. Here's our three picks to listen to this week. We'll begin with Rebecca's choice. Billie Holiday by Warpaint. Why this, Rebecca? Why now?
Well, they have got a reissue of the album coming out in September, and it's packaged with the EP that came before the album, mm-hmm. which had the original Billie Holiday on, mm-hmm. and they've done a bit of re-recording of stuff as well, and this is a new version of Billie Holiday that's been beefed up by Steve Mackey from Pulp, has produced it and stuck some extra drums on it, and he's made it sound better, actually. I think the original, in comparison, sounds a little bit anemic. It's given it a bit of life, and yeah. Well, Warpaint are an interesting one because I didn't like them at first. It took me ages to get into
really?
Them. I saw them live and then it all fell into place and I was like, they're brilliant. And now I love them and I've gone back to that album so many times. But at first, just didn't click.
It's interesting they're reissuing the album because that implies they think it's sort of teetering on the brink of major...
Yeah.
Breakthrough.
I mean,
it?
They've played at every single festival.
Yeah.
The world.
There is definitely a bit of sort of motion behind Warpaint, I think, commercially at the moment.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
You get the sense that people think it's going to be a bit like Fleet Foxes were. You know what I mean? There's going to come a point where the bloke who lives two doors down from me and buys two CDs a year comes out and goes, "Have you heard this band Warpaint?"
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That they're going to reach a wider market.
Why is that, do you think? Is it because they've been on kind of adverts and syncs and
yeah,
stuff like
that? I think it's easy sometimes to, if you work in the music business or you write about music or you do a blog or something like that, it's easy to think that everybody knows about something when they don't.
I think their Jules Holland performance as well was kind of something that sent them in this direction. That was a few months ago, but people that would never have talked about it before were really enthused by it and thought that was really great.
And it's kind of a no-brainer. Really, on one level, you know, pretty ladies playing kind of laid-back music. You know what I mean? It's not. I think they're really good, Warpaint. They're not the most sort of madly challenging band in the world or anything like that. But they're very good at what they do. They're very sort of atmospheric.
Yes.
Quite hard to categorise as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
When they first came off, I think there was this really slightly sexist thing where people say, oh, they're the new Slits.
They're the new Toto Quayle.
Yeah. so for a while, it took me a little bit to kind of work out what they were and what they were doing.
What level were they like? I love the idea of like the Slits.
Exactly,
like
that's how they were built to
possession
me anyway.
Of breasts.
Yeah.
That's terrible though, isn't it? It's like whenever you get a female singer that isn't sort of packing an acoustic guitar and a load of mimsy songs about, you know, blokes, people go, Patti Smith. And it's like, it's nothing like Patti Smith. You know, offensive to both Patti Smith and the women who get compared to her, I think. Are you, now we've established they're not like the Slits, did that put you off them when you found out they weren't?
Well, I just thought, this isn't what I was expecting at all. But I really like them, and I like this, and I definitely like what Steve's done with the production, because it's, you know, when all these bands have been going kind of stadium-sized, it always kind of ruins it for the kind of the fans. But I don't think that's happened at all here. It's like
there is really a medium path, though. I think that's the really interesting thing, is that in the 80s, being of enormously advanced years, I'm old enough to remember when you used to get bands in sort of 1985, 86 would get signed by a major label. They'd be on, like, you know, Creation or 53rd and 3rd or something like that. And there was a real sense they had absolutely no idea what to do with an indie band if they're on a major label. They give them that kind of big mid-80s doof drum sound and everything. It's really weird. Put a load of synthesizers on it and that sort of thing. And it's intriguing that it's still an issue. Mm-hmm. For bands now, you know what I mean? That because really,
but aren't they just doing the same thing now? But it's just quite cool now to do it.
Yeah, actually, that's true, isn't it? Yeah, you go and see. I went to see Washed Out, mm-hmm. about whom more later in the show. I went to them earlier this week in Brighton, and it's. I mean, they were brilliant. They were absolutely brilliant. It's completely not what you'd expect, because the lead guy is this sort of font of enthusiasm, and sort of, hey, come on, you guys, clapping his hands over his head.
That's not what I would expect. No,
to the point that when they first came on, I was like, oh God, what is there another support act on or something? I thought they said they're on at 10. But it was just like
says a lot for the charisma of modern bands.
But you know what I mean? It's like chill wave, blog favourite. You don't expect some guy to bound on stage in a vest. One song he goes, his opening show was like, hey, you guys, you like reggae music? Because this one's a reggae song, sing along. And he was totally unironic, amazing. But the music itself, I was listening to it thinking, on one level, this is 80s pop music. This is kind of, you know what I mean? But it's super cool. And it's done it, because obviously it strips away all the weird production and you're sort of left with these kind of 80s pop songs that are behind them. Going back to the original point about which that to which that had no relevance, it is odd that people have difficulty in bridging the gap between, you know what I mean? It wasn't a problem for Oasis to do that. You know, Oasis managed to do that without changing anything about their style whatsoever. Maybe it was a bit, you know, more inclined that way at the start. But I just find it odd that it's an issue for bands now. And I find it's really weird that major labels sort of think, well, we don't really know what to do with, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? How are we going to make the XX Phil Wembley? Get into bound on stage in a singlet, clapping their hands over their heads. That's what I say. That'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Hey, you guys!
I'm imagining that now. I think we should.
I'd love to be in that meeting.
Oh, so would I. You need to book your ideas up a bit.
Wear some brighter clothes.
Wear some brighter clothes. Have you ever seen Queen's performance at Live Aid? That's what the direction I think you should go. A bit more of the old day-o from you, please. So we're all in agreement about Billie Holiday by Warpaint.
I don't know what about. What have
we like it? Do we all like it?
Do we
all like it?
We all like it.
Yeah. We all like it. We all like Warpaint. We all like the song Billie Holiday by Warpaint. We like Steve Mackey's production of the new version of Billie Holiday by Warpaint. And we wish Warpaint all the best in the future. In their attempt at getting the bloke who lives two doors down from me to like them. Okay, next up, this is my choice. That's Fast Peter by Moonface, my choice this week. It is a solo project, as I've learned by the frontman of alt-rock favourites, Wolf Parade. I'm not very knowledgeable about this guy's oeuvre. I'm not very au fait with the work of Wolf Parade or Frog Eyes or any of the other bands that he's been in. I just pulled this out of my pile of unlistened to CDs one night and was really, really struck by the sort of weird, it's an odd album. It's only got 5 tracks on it. They're very long, serpentine, weird, kind of synthy, sort of, I don't really know how to describe them. The thing I felt it had most in common with, sort of spiritually, if not sonically, was Rock Bottom by Robert Wyatt, which is another album full of very long, kind of synthesizery sort of songs. There's just something about it I found quite haunting. I spent ages thinking, God, his voice sounds like somebody. It sounds like somebody. And then I was, it's the guy from
James?
No, man, no, not James. No, worse, Interpol.
I thought Interpol as well, yeah.
I was like,
worse than James.
Interpol.
Poor Interpol. Oh. No, no, worse.
Well, no, I mean, Interpol are all right. I mean, it's fair, but it's just a bit, No, because I sat there thinking, it's somebody really cool. I was thinking, it's some really cool guy from the 70s or something. It's their voice is reminding me of somebody. And I was like, no, it's the fella out of Interpol. The whole album, which has an enormously long title that I've forgotten, that's like, it's called something like Banjo Music That We Didn't Want to Listen to on a Marimba or something like that. But it's really good. It's a really, really good record. It's a really strange, different, odd, sort of, I found it quite bewitching record. I'm going to throw it open to the floor. Tim Jones.
The lyrics are quite weird as well, aren't they?
It's really weird, yeah.
I liked the bit about he's in love with some girl, but all they ever do, she's so far away, all they do is talk on computers.
Yeah. It's a modern malaise, isn't it?
It is.
Shut down Twitter. Stop this nonsense. Yeah, there's that sort of line he goes, we talked about this while we were high on drugs or something like that, and it just seems kind of a sort of quite melancholy little reference to make, you know, yeah, what I mean? It's not this sort of like, oh, hey, we're on drugs kind of thing. It's this sort of terrible in-depth conversation about how miserable you are, you know, at 4 a.m.
People don't say I'm high on drugs very often, do they? They normally allude to it specifically, and I find that quite jarring when I heard that line, because it's not often that you hear someone say I am high on drugs.
No, I've never heard anybody say I am high on drugs.
You've been out with me, have you? That's all I say.
All the time, even when you're not.
Yeah.
Did you like it? Did anybody else like it?
I actually really liked it. I hadn't heard his solo stuff before. I've heard Wolf Parade.
So you were aware of his oeuvre?
Yeah, and the voice is what a lot of people pick up on, his voice and the way he sings. And is it, you know, people don't like it, or it's a Marmite thing. They either absolutely love him or they absolutely hate him. Mm. Probably because they think he sounds like the guy out of Interpol.
Interpol, yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know, when it first started, I was like, oh God, what's this? It's like someone dicking around with some toy instruments. But actually, it unfolds into something quite beautiful and moving. So
it keeps happening on the album. It's definitely got this kind of weird sense of, and I think it is somebody dicking around at home on instruments. I mean, I read the sort of thing he wrote about it, explanatory thing, and he got like snow, there was where he lives, that he got snowed in or something and made this album when he couldn't leave the house. And, you know, it's a strange sort of isolated, weird kind of vibe to it.
Taps into that psychedelic thing as well. So many bands are kind of bringing back a different strand of psychedelia than we're probably used to in the 90s. Is it?
Yeah, because I think psychedelia in the 90s is very much refracted through the Tomorrow Never Knows template.
Exactly,
you know what I mean? Whether that's Oasis or the Private Psychedelic Reel by the Chemical Brothers or all those sort of... And there are other routes into making weird, drugged-out music rather than sounding like a Beatles record from 1966.
Exactly. I think MGMT and Scum and The Horrors are all kind of looking at those records a lot at the moment.
Loads of E, isn't there, going around? I was reading that interview with The Horrors, and they were like, yeah, we did loads of E when we were making this record.
Really?
Yeah.
Imagine The Horrors on E. Imagine Ferris on... Oh,
they'd be on stage going, hey, guys!
What's his name? Be lovely, though. Reese. He'd just be smashing on it, wouldn't he? He'd just be like all like enthusiastic about obscure freak beat records that he's paid 150 quid for. I love Reese from The Horrors. He's a lovely fella. Rebecca, well, let's talk about this record.
Song. Well, it's long, isn't it? Which is
the shortest track on the album,
and that's still usually about 6 minutes too long for my usual tastes. But I find, like you, Tim, I really enjoyed it. I found it quite soothing, which is weird because normally that kind of really repetitive driving sort of sound makes me panic a bit after a certain amount of time. But I found it quite relaxing. And like I say, like we were saying, the lyrics, weird.
I was reading Retromania, Simon Reynolds' book, and there's a lot of really interesting ideas, I think, in that book. I think it coalesces into a single argument terribly well. But one of the ideas I really like is his mate who's got into the idea of slow listening, rather than, you know, like the slow eating movement, the slow food movement. And I thought, God, that's really true, particularly if you're a journalist. You do have this tendency to just make snap judgments about things based on one listen, and, you know, such a sort of volume of music to listen to. And I thought, no, I'm going to really, if I find something that I like, I'm going to listen to it loads in the way that I will try and listen to it loads in the way I would have done.
So not slowing it down like Justin Bieber when they slow it down to 25 minutes long. And it's strange,
DJ
have
Screw.
You heard these? They're really beautiful.
What, Justin Bieber?
It's a Justin Bieber single, and then they slow it right down, so it's about half an hour long.
Oh, no, yeah, I brought something like that in. Yeah. I think it was Friday by Rebecca Black, wasn't it? We've played it on the show. It sounded absolutely good. Someone on sort of 4AD.
So but that's not the slow music.
No, slow. It means just taking time and sort of trying to devote.
Doing your job properly, really, isn't it?
It's not really, but is it doing your job properly? Because that means that you listen to less music.
Yeah.
And then people go, oh, I haven't listened to, you know, you've not heard the Steve Mackey version of the Warpaint album. I've just been sort of trying to, like, the way I would lavish attention on a record when I was, you know, I only had the money to buy that one album a week or something like that, or one album every fortnight or something. And I've listened to this album a lot. Organ Music, Not Vibraphone Like I'd Hoped by Spencer Krug, under the name Moonface. It repays repeated listening. There's a lot, I think, in that record. It's a very intriguing, strange, serpentine journey. This is our last track. It's Tim's choice. I'm a mosquito mass murderist, and every single word of it's true. Let me tell you about the things that I do. Because when I hear him buzzing, then I kill him by the dozen. While mosquitoes seem to think that he was smart, but he wasn't. Because it took me a while, and he got in some bites. But he got greedy, so I turned him to graffiti mid-flight. Blam, now you're on the wall, and it's all over for you. I just leave you as a warning for the rest of your crew. So how do I begin to continue this continuum? They keep on creeping in, but I keep them to a minimum. Because it's my style to keep them sunk in my area. The distinctive vocal stylings of Jeffrey Lewis there with Mosquito Mass Murderer. I'm a huge Jeffrey Lewis fan. I think he's absolutely fantastic. I think that the sort of slight kind of Jonathan Richman whimsy wackiness of what he does tends to be mitigated by the fact that he's very, very, very good with words. He's a brilliant lyricist. Tim, why did you bring this track in? Is this representative of his forthcoming album?
I haven't heard all of the album, but I think this is more of his wacky side.
Yeah, I think we can safely say that
just in case you're worried out there,
a quasi hip hop track about mosquitoes is probably.
I saw him do this live about a year or two ago, and it was so funny and so brilliant. Maybe on record it doesn't quite translate in the same way, but I just wanted to bring it in because I just love Jeffrey Lewis, and I like, and you know, there are some very funny lines even in this. There's one about a mosquito getting turned into a blanket by a spider, and it says, "I'm not the only one who's good at rapping."
Oh,
I do like him a lot, and I think it's just the slowest build up to, you know, an artist getting successful I've ever known, because every time he comes out with a new album, there's more people saying, "Oh, he's one of the most talented lyricists around." I think Jarvis Cocker has been saying it
for quite a long time. Yeah.
Oh, has he?
But no, I think he's a great. I saw him live probably the same tour you did, and he was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I loved his last album. I loved the album before that, the Crass 12 Crass songs. That's probably my favourite album of that year, actually.
I always find with his albums, there is a bit of stuff which you don't want to listen to that much, but there's always at least one really kind of amazing journey through an amazing story.
Yeah, he's a great storyteller,
and there's always one really beautiful melancholic song on there as well, which is just a basic pop song.
And also, his comics are fantastic. Mm-hmm. I bought a load of his comics when I went to see him live, and they're just terrific. I mean, they're genuinely funny, entertaining, wonderful things. Rebecca, are you a Jeffrey Lewis fan?
Well, I like the idea of Jeffrey Lewis more than I think I like the reality of him. Me and Tim were talking about this yesterday.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, because I just always find that there are certain people that I find it hard to listen to more than three songs in a row of, and he is one of them. And I'm not sure why it is. And I don't know if it's because of his
voice.
Yeah, possibly. But then another one is the Beastie Boys.
They
really
always
like.
Be like that, though.
But I can't. maybe that's what it is.
People who do that.
That's, yeah. So we've established that.
Slightly whiny New York voice is.
This is a revelation to me.
It's maybe a little bit draining as well, because sometimes when you listen to a Jeffrey Lewis song, you actually have to pay attention from start to finish listen to every bit.
And
it's a different experience, isn't it, to just stick. I mean, if you just listen to it as kind of background music, it's not very enjoyable.
No. It's definitely, yes. That's one of the things that's interesting about the fact that he's good live, because so much of it is predicated on the lyrics, which tend to get sort of buried a bit, you know, when you go and see a band.
Maybe given my Warpaint conversion after seeing them live, I should go and see him.
Rough Trade Double Header.
He's one of the best.
I've never seen him.
Best people in the world to see live.
Yeah.
Actually, like Jonathan Richman, who can again be irritating on record, but is absolutely fantastic live performer. Now, we didn't have any of your online responses to Singles Club last week, because we didn't have Singles Club last week. We had an interview with Steve Reich instead. Get us. But 2 weeks ago, we had tracks by Lana Del Rey, Jonathan Wilson and Butcher Boy, as well as an interview with Ernest Green from Washed Out. And this is what you thought. Pop Bijou, or one word, said, Lana Del Rey, can I admit that I have a crush on her and I'm straight, a girl? Her management did the perfect thing. They launched the image along with the music. It's a whole package. She is very pretty, but it's the fact that her voice is sexy and you just feel something from the music. It's not just looks. Funny how much sexier she is than those more plasticky slash always naked pop people like Rihanna, etc. You're very keen on her, aren't you? There's a lot of... A little bit more about the music, a little bit less about the lips, thank you very much. Mr. B wrote, washed out, washed up more like. See what you did there, Mr. B. Brilliant. Citizen journalism at its finest. Did he not mention his love of shit chill-out compilations? Very overrated. Anyway, on the subject of musical people named Ernest. Oh, yes, that was a big point of discussion with Paper Feeders a couple of weeks ago. This from Arachnoid. Ernest Tubb, the country singer. Ernest Stoneman and Ernest Ashworth. Who's Ernest Ashworth? Dickie Ashcroft's dad. I don't know. Who's he? I've never heard of him. Ernest Rangling. Yes, very good. Great Jamaican guitarist. Could this be a meme that would run and run? Let's hope not. Anyway, post your thoughts on this week's tracks, along with your famous musical Ernests, to our Facebook page, tweet us, or leave a comment on the blog. The address is at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Next on the programme, Hot Chips' Joe Goddard and Ministry of Sound DJ Raph Rondell, who are two bears. They came into the studio recently to speak to Ben Bowman Thomas, and he asked them how they came together.
All you out there on the floor, gonna get you in my paws and give me a bear hug. We've brought you all a gift for maximum dance or uplift. It's called the bear hug. Sent to make you move. Just get up on this groove and have a bear hug.
I met Raph DJing about 4 or 5 years ago, 6 maybe even. And we really enjoyed DJing together. I love the records that Raph played. Got a real kind of love and understanding of house music that goes back for quite a while. And so we started making music together about 2 years ago.
I'd always been a DJ. Joe and I had bumped into each other in DJ boxes all over the place. And we talked about making tunes, and our pal Stephen, who runs Moshi Moshi Records, had a fantasy that Joe and I and Joe Mount from Metronomy should start a band called The Three Bears. But we don't know Joe so well, so when we started having the conversations about making music, he didn't get included, and he's lost a bit of weight now, so he wouldn't quite
fit the
description.
I did mention it to him once, though.
Put a few pounds on him. He might get a look in, mate. Really, things are going pretty well for us now.
And you guys also put on these Greco-Roman parties, right?
Yeah, us as a kind of collectively, really. Joe and I are part of it.
People really love to play jungle and reggae and kind of old pop music, you know, 80s pop music and house and techno, and I play a lot of garage music and disco, so it's kind of anything goes, really. The idea when we first started was that we wanted to put on a kind of chaotic party in a kind of fun locations,
and that kind of impulse seems to have translated into the EP that you guys have done, which, I mean, it's 4 tracks long but covers everything from bits of dancehall, bits of almost Duke style stuff, and then I guess more classic house background. Are you trying to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks?
Well, the idea really is, where it comes from really is, like, in the studio, I find it much more fun to be working on different kinds of things, you know? Like, one day you can really be in the mood to make house music. Maybe you had a great weekend listening to house music, or you'd heard something, or that's the thing that's inspiring you, and so you do that, and another day you want to do something faster or slower, you know? And I guess with Two Bears, you know, when we're playing out together, it's a lot of house music. That's kind of something that I like about the project, is it's been like, you know, that's been an increasing kind of passion and a love in my life over the last few years, and I've learned a lot about it from Raph, so that's been a fun part of it. But we go into different styles of music, well. But then the idea is one that is close to our hearts, like, you know, the kind of clubbing that we've grown up with, like Raph's, you know, some of the early parties were early Basement Jacks things where it'd be sweaty and fun and quite chaotic with, like, people spilling beer over each other.
Really,
like,
inclusive.
That kind of house music, you know, like, not, you know, a very plush, like, not like Pasha, you know.
Yeah.
And the idea of Bear Hug is that that's okay to be into house music and be, like, hugging each other and getting sweaty late at night, like that's all right as well, you know. It doesn't have to be like Poncy.
I can see it almost becoming a bit of a gay anthem as well, because obviously the whole two bears thing, it's, as we kind of touched on before, is that is kind of hinting at that classic gay sort of identity of the big guy who's very, very hirsute. I mean, are you getting a, is there that kind of gay audience who are really latching onto that? Are they misinterpreting it almost?
A lot of the best dance music has been the DJs have been gay, or the producers, or the singers, and we love a lot of that stuff. So it was something that we wanted to express our appreciation for it. I've been worried that like people might think that we're kind of nicking bits of gay culture. So I'm hoping that there isn't some kind of backlash at some point. But but yeah, there's a genuine like love for that. I mean, you know, you wouldn't really have house and disco without like gay culture in New York, you know. So.
And Joe, you obviously are taking a bit of a break from Hot Chip now, and there's other guys in the band doing other projects as well. I read in an interview that Alexis Taylor, your kind of co-producer, co-songwriter in Hot Chip, said that you were slightly uncomfortable to begin with about him writing songs for a about group and sort of doing things outside of the kind of number one band. Why were you kind of feeling that way?
Well, I think probably that was more a feeling that Alexis had, like, we never had a kind of argument or anything about any about those issues. I think probably all of us in the group, like, there's a moment when you realise that another person is doing another project, and it kind of, you get a slight moment of jealousy, you know, because we've been working together for however long, 10, maybe even like 15 years or something, and kind of, you know, very close in some ways. And so when you see people doing other things, you kind of half think like, well, we could have done that, you know. You don't have to go somewhere else and do it, but in actuality, after that kind of thought, you very quickly realize that people doing other things outside of Hot Chip or any kind of like group that is your day job is actually really kind of essential and positive. So having another outlet makes you realize what you like about doing Hot Chip, and it gives you a chance to express something else that you couldn't really fit into Hot Chip. So,
and can you already tell that you're bringing those things that you've learned from those separate groups to your songwriting in Hot Chip?
Yeah,
now?
I think absolutely. Yeah, I really do. Like, there's one new track that we've written and just kind of been working on, where a lot of the kind of things that Raph and I do in Two Bears have really directly fed into it, just in terms of kind of structuring the track and arranging it, you know.
Yeah. And you've got a solo record coming out as well. I mean, how do you, when you're writing a song, how do you think this is going to be right for Hot Chip, this will be right for a Two Bears project?
Yeah.
I'd rather do this myself.
Well, essentially, if it's a kind of electronic pop song that I'm writing, then I'll send it to Alexis and see if he has any ideas. Or if it's kind of a house track, I might think like this fits with the idea of Two Bears. And if it's just kind of weird, then I'd do it myself.
yeah. And Raph, equally, have you learned things from Joe just as he's learned from you? I mean, are you going down more of a songwritery route now?
I've definitely learned a lot from Joe, you know. I don't really know what route I'm taking at the moment. I mean, we're necessarily writing songs because we're making an album. Songs are a really important thing to me, and a lot of my favourite house records are those big, big vocal screamers, you know. And to start with the Two Bears, with the housey tunes anyway, the idea would always, the vocals that I put down to start with, the idea would always be that we'd get a woman to sing them, basically, someone to come and really belt them out. But, you know, we decided that the tunes had a bit more personality and individuality. And I was persuaded that it was all right, basically, you know. I was, to start with, quite sort of, you know, I would always cringe when I heard my voice.
You're finding you're more and more confident with that now?
Yeah, I'm getting more used to it, yeah, more used to the sound of my own voice.
That's not
know.
Quite a ringing endorsement. I'm tolerating my own voice.
Well, you know, it's a difficult thing. I mean, even you probably doing this, you know, you hear yourself back and it's like, do I, even, you know, in days past, you'd hear yourself on an answer phone, you think, Jesus, do I really sound like that? And it's also about kind of, you know, creating a persona for yourself as an artist in one way or another. Because especially we have to get out there and represent these things in a context of club or a live situation at some point. And it's all new to me. I've worked as a publicist and as a A&R and as a club promoter and all sorts of different things through the music industry, I'm just sort of getting used to the fact that I'm allowed to do this, really. I'm allowed to get away with it.
That's Raph and Joe from Two Bears. Thanks to Ben Beaumont-Thomas there. That's it for this week's programme. Thanks as well to Rebecca Nicholson and Tim Jones. Thank you very much for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
Hey. No, you don't think it's a pleasure, Rebecca?
No, I'm still hysterical from Tim's
It's totally staying.
It is a reaction.
That's what a lot of ladies say.
I'm no stranger to that reaction.
Thanks for listening. The programme was produced by Scott Cawley and I'm Alexis Petridis. Will you stop sniggering, children? Please. We'll be back next week with a Notting Hill Carnival special. We'll see you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.